I don't think any of us really like to feel small in the eyes of people or to have to humble ourselves, but the more that we know about God and the more we understand about Him, I think the more we develop humility and we are humbled before Him. When we understand who He is and who we are in relationship to Him. The New Testament Greek word that is used to that we translate to humility, according to Strong's and his dictionary of words, to depress. Figuratively, he says to humiliate, and that's an interesting thought. None of us really like to be thought of as small or humiliated, and that is to be humiliated in condition or humiliated in your heart, or the idea of to abase or to bring low or humble. A good example of when this word is used is a passage I think that most of us think of when we think about humility. It's over in 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 6, the passage that's down there at the bottom. And you'll recognize it right away, where the Apostle Peter said, "Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time." So right there you see that in relationship to God, we need to, under the mighty hand of God, to understand how mighty He is, but you are to humble yourself. And so humility is something that I have to do, and it's something that I have to do within my own thinking. So as we go through this lesson, I hope that as we make application ourselves, which is what we're supposed to be doing with the Scriptures, is that we will be thinking about our own life and our own approach to things and whether or not we are humble. And I think all of us, as I've titled the lesson, is developing humility. I think it's something that all of us will spend our lifetime learning how to do, learning how to develop that. I think some of us, of course, might be further along or may come easier than others. But as I started off, most of us don't like to be pressed low or to be humiliated, as that word is used at times. But what happens is I have to have my own self-awareness. And self is the greatest obstacle in most of the things that we talk about, because these are things that I have to do. And so when it comes to humbling myself before God so He can exalt me, then that's something I have to do. I have to learn, and I have to learn how to do it in my own thinking. And so that means I have to be self-aware of my limitations, of my imperfections, of my own lack of knowledge. I have to be aware of that. Because if I'm not aware of those things, then I don't see any limitations in myself. I don't see any imperfections, and I definitely don't see any of lack of knowledge that I might have. And so any of those things, when they're out of whack, the opposite is I would begin to think more highly of myself. And so I have to have a self-awareness of who I am. And so this idea, too, of humbling myself is, it's a spirit that is the same idea, but it's self-inflicted. I have to, again, self-inflict, which means I have to work at it. If you think about that idea, it's something I have to work at. It's something you have to work at. Humility is something that we have to work at. And if I'm humble, then God is going to lift me up, or He's going to lift you up. And that's what 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 6 says. And so we want to lower ourselves so God can exalt us. There was a man by the name of M.R.D. Hahn who once said, "Humility is something we should constantly pray for and yet never thank God that we have." And there's a lot of different, you know, sayings, and sometimes I think of country music songs that talk about humility and things of that nature. But that's a pretty good, I never thank God that I have it, because what's His point? Well, it's something that I'm going to spend my lifetime developing. Because in moments, I can get full of myself and I can not be humble before God. And a lot of times what that does do is that leads to shame or humiliation. And I wanted to show you a kind of a progression here. So our scripture reading in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 9, as Paul is writing his first letter to the church at Corinth, he said, I am the least of the apostles. So this is written in and around 57, 58 AD. So where's his circle? I'm the least among the apostles, among the 12 plus him, among the 13. I'm the least of them. But then you fast forward, and in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 8, he says, I'm the very least of all saints. This has grown now. Of all the Christians, I'm the very least. And this is written around 62, 63 AD from a Roman prison. And then watch this. One of his last epistles is the epistles to Timothy. And in 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 15, he says, I am the foremost of sinners. So look at that. What I wanted you to see in this, and I wish that I had thought of this, but it was something that as I was studying, I came across. But what's happening to Paul as this, I'm the least of 13, I'm the least of the saints, which would be all the Christians, and then I'm the least, the chief of all sinners, or the foremost of all sinners. Have not all sinned and fallen short? And he says, because I persecuted the church. So what I'm getting at is, what's happening over the years? What's happening? He's lowering himself. He's depressing himself. Not depression, but depressing himself. It's self-inflicted. It is the way that he views himself in relationship to others and to God. And this lesson is not about pride, but if you want to swing to the other end, the opposite of that, of course, is pride. Now, his view of himself is growing downward. Downward. And that's what humility does. If you think about the very definition of the word, it drives us downward in our own thinking of ourselves. Now, again, this isn't talking about to the point where there's absolutely no self-esteem, no confidence, but because you can have all of that and then be humble before God. Because in your relationship with God, you understand that whatever your talents are or whatever you might be able to accomplish, you what do? You give God the glory for that. You don't think highly of yourself. And so he's got a perfect example of pride and humility in his parable found in Luke chapter 18. So turn, if you would, over to Luke chapter 18. And we're not going to read the parable. We'll just highlight a couple of things. But you're very familiar with this parable. It's the Pharisee, and they're both praying. And I want you to look at the attitude of the sinner in verse 13. A tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I mean, the whole demeanor of the person that Jesus described is lowly. A person that has been brought low. A person that has been brought low in his shame and his own humiliation before God. Now, that's contrasted with, in verse 11 and 12, with the Pharisee, who you almost picture, he's got his suspenders on and he's sitting here and he's saying things like, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners and unjust adulterers, or even as this tax collector over there. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. You see, Jesus, in his parable, an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, you can't miss his point. One attitude is condemned and the other is exalted. And it's not as you would think, because the Pharisee is the religious man. Oh, he's the one that is strict when it comes to following the law of God. But what was the problem? He thought so much of himself. And he compared himself with somebody else. But there's a danger when you compare yourself to somebody else, isn't there? We're not supposed to do that. We really shouldn't have this, well, I'm better than Brother Thompson over here. Right there, I've done wrong, because that's not what the Scriptures teach in Philippians chapter 2. The mind of Christ would say to esteem others better than yourself. And so if we have those things, that's what we have to learn to squish and to squelch. And so you have to work at it, don't you? This is something we all have to develop and get better at. And so that's really what we're wanting to talk about. Now, as we consider the development of humility, I want to make just a couple of, just an observation. We have a saying, eaten humble pie. And, or we say he had to eat some crow or something of that nature. But the humble pie, what that means is I do something wrong or I say something wrong or we're caught doing something wrong and we're embarrassed and we're humiliated. Maybe we've done like we've been outspoken and overconfident. And then when we fall flat on our face, we say, oh, he had to eat some humble pie. Well, you know where that came from? and this is disgusting. It is disgusting to me. Now, Steve deer hunts and others hunt deer. And maybe you like the liver and the kidney and all those innards. And they called that humble. And they used to make pies. Humble, without the H, humble pie. That's the origin of eating humble pie. You see how it progressed? We eat the liver and the kidneys of a deer most of the time, and it developed into eating humble pie. So I understand. Well, again, you can see that that's a disgusting thing, and it's an embarrassing thing to have to eat humble pie. And I can think of all kinds of examples where, you know, I've had to do that, and I hope that you think and remember times that you've had to have a big piece of humble pie. The moment a situation, has humbled me. You've been humbled. And so this afternoon, we want to consider our purposeful efforts that I have and you have each and every day that we might be humble. Proverbs 15 and verse 33 says this, "The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility," which is exactly what Peter was saying. Humble yourself, God exalts you. So before there's really the type of honor that we're looking for, there is humility. And there is the right kind of honor, and there's the wrong kind of honor. And that's why Jesus would condemn the Pharisees, because he said, you know what you want is you want the praises and the honor of the people, the public. You want them to call you names. You want to stand out. You want the chief places. And everything was in contrast to what Jesus was teaching for disciples in his kingdom, that they would be servants. They wouldn't be the first shall be last, the last shall be first. And so the kind of honor that we're looking for is the kind of the honor that the Lord himself gives. So, in thinking about this idea of how you develop humility, well, one thing is certain. You have to rid yourself of stubbornness. Pharaoh of Egypt is just a great example of a man who was, as the Bible talks about, the Lord hardening his heart, but he was just stubborn. He just dug in. And Exodus chapter 10, verse 1 through 4, kind of gives you a picture of that. This happened over and over in the different plagues. This particular one is when the locusts are to come. We're in Exodus 10, verse 1. "Now the Lord said to Moses, 'Go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show the signs of mine before him, that you may tell in the hearing of your sons and your sons' sons, the mighty things I've done in Egypt, and my signs which I've done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord.' So Moses and Aaron came to Pharaoh and said to him, 'Thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I'll bring locusts into your territory.' And he refused. But notice he says, 'How long will you refuse to humble yourself?' Pharaoh, you think that you are the mightiest person on the whole planet, and the Lord is doing all of these things exactly as said through the mouth of Aaron, Moses' prophet, Moses' spokesperson. And he's doing every bit of it. And every time he goes, please make it stop. And then what does he do? He digs right in again. And there, here comes another one. And so he's refusing to humble himself. And that's just a terrible quality that all of us, I think, have at times. Sometimes we say, we share it as family traits. We say, oh, that side of the family sure is stubborn. But there's nothing beautiful about this. And it's something that if I'm going to develop humility, I have to rid myself of this type of stubbornness. And the sad thing is, and I think you will agree with me, it's easy to spot stubbornness in somebody else and not in yourself. It's easy to see somebody else, oh, you're just being stubborn. But not see the same thing within ourselves. So you have to overcome stubbornness, and you have to do that through humility. You see how that works? I have to learn to lower myself, to say, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to think less of myself and my thoughts, and maybe I need to be thinking more about God and about others. And that carries over to the idea of what about correction? What if someone points something out? Well, I can dig in and say, how dare you? Or I can humble myself and consider what's being said because I want to be right. I want to do good. Or maybe there's instruction. Or maybe even rebuke. So in Proverbs, you'll recall that when we studied Proverbs, Proverbs 9 verse 8 says, do not correct a scoffer. You know why? Because he'll hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he'll love you. Now, how can you rebuke a wise man and him love you? Because he's humble enough to recognize this person loves me, and therefore they're pointing this out. And I want to be right. I want to do right. And so I have to empty myself of any kind of staunch stubbornness or holding my ground. And so the wise man is humble. He's low in heart. He wants to do right. If that means letting go instead of digging in, that's what he or she is going to do. And so that's the first thing that I saw. Now, keeping the commandments of God, no matter the situation. Let me kind of explain this one. The Israelites are a good example of this because they wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years. That was God's plan. And it was God's plan to do that to humble them. So look at Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. So we're looking at why God, you know, they said, we want to go back to Egypt. He punishes them. But notice what it says. Every command which I commanded you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness. For what reason? To humble you and test you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and to fear him. There's a number of really good points, I think, to look at and consider here. One is God uses a test. God used a test to see, are you going to keep my commandments or not? Verse 2. That's different than tempting. God gives a command. In fact, it's been some time now ago, but I talked about God providing manna in this particular context. About that was a test. You remember, I was like, point number one, point number three. And it's like everybody could understand what God told them, and then they would do something completely different. This was a test. Now, in relationship to humility, it was a test to see what was in their heart. And it was to humble them. And really what this is what the heart of this is, are you going to keep my commandments no matter the situation? If you're hungry, are you going to trust me? Are you going to humble yourself to know that I'm not going to let you starve out here in the wilderness? You remember that was one of their complaints. God's brought us out here. Moses, you led us out here in the wilderness to kill us of starvation. We're just going to die out here in the wilderness. And basically say, okay, God did all of those power and all those wonders and those miracles and got Pharaoh to let you go, and then he brought you out in the winter wilderness and said, I'll just starve to death and you can't have anything to drink. You see how little they trusted in God? And even after watching him have water come out of a rock, they would still grumble and complain. So for 40 years, what was he doing? He was humbling them. So when they got to the brink of the promised land, and we sing the song, on Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wishful eye to Canaan's land, that whole song is written, they're on this side of the Jordan, and they're now going to cross the Jordan into the promised land. Because they said, we can't do it. So now, under Joshua's leadership, they're ready to go. Why? They've been humbled. They've been humbled. And that next generation is ready to go because they're going to trust in God to run the nations out. Now, that doesn't lead to all the stories we have of where they failed and they didn't. But will I depend upon God? Well, the reason I put the no matter the situation is, you know what reigns supreme today is situation ethics. And it's ruining people. Because my circumstances allows me to violate God's law. For example, I'm stealing because I'm hungry. So I violate the commandments of God because the situation demands it. And there's a lot of people that do a lot of wrong things, and what they do is they try to blame somebody else as the victim. They are the victim of some circumstances, no accountability. But the right way of thinking is to view the situation as an opportunity to do what God commands. You see how you flip that around? I look at the situation that confronts me as an opportunity to keep the commandments of God. Not a reason to say, oh, you know, situation demanded that I do wrong. That's the complete opposite of what the Lord would have us. Because He wants us to trust in Him. And you do that because you are humbled. And that's what He was doing to the people in the wilderness. And look at verse 6 again. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. What does that sound like? Doesn't that sound exactly what Solomon concluded at the end of our study of Ecclesiastes? After everything's said and done, he said, fear God, keep His commandments. And what did he just say here? Keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. And you'll find that when the question is asked, what does the Lord require? That's what He requires, is to walk humbly before Him, trusting in Him, doing things His way. And so I have to learn to keep the commandments of God no matter the circumstances. And I have to develop humility by recognizing that, and that'll strengthen my downward trend. Because I've got, and that's what the point was. God wanted him to understand, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And that's what we're doing here, is we're learning to trust God. And that's humble. Because I can tell you, almost every one of us hates to have to depend on somebody else, to ask for help. Remember, God's people, I tell you, and it's hard for me. We feel like we're failing in some way to have somebody help or pitch in. And what that is this, it's the, you know, sometimes sometimes it's good for people to have opportunity to do things that maybe you can do yourself. But the better good is to just humble and swallow your own pride and humble yourself and let good happen. Now, another thing is when I sin, developing humility when I sin. David committed adultery. He committed murder. 1 Samuel chapter 11. What would he do when confronted by the prophet Nathan? Nathan comes and tells him the story. Well, what he had been doing all along was he was trying to deny it, or he was rather trying to hide it, trying to make it go away. He could have dug in and said, well, you know, if she hadn't been out there bathing on the rooftop, or if Uriah had just gone back home to his wife, and all the things and tricks that he tried. But David had a choice when Nathan confronted him in 1 Samuel chapter 12. And that choice was, am I going to humble myself or am I going to lift myself up? We're in 2 Samuel, that should be 2 Samuel 12. What would he do? Verse 13. So David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. He humbled himself. Saul, when confronted with sin, dug in, and he's called stubborn. People made me do it. We did what you commanded. David humbled himself. And humility is an indication to God that I know my accountability to Him. And so he would pen in Psalm 51, David would pen as he's writing about his sin. I wanted to point out a couple of things. Psalm 51 and verse 4, against you and you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak. His primary concern was not to save face. You think it was embarrassing what he got caught doing? In fact, one of the punishments was all of his concubines would be up on the housetop, and his son would do all that before everybody. But what he wrote, against you and you only have I sinned. And look at verse 17. The sacrifice of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. Every bit of that, those words reek humility. And if you break that down, a broken spirit is godly sorrow produces repentance, produces the necessary change. You're broken in spirit. And sometimes that's what has to happen. The spirit has to be broken. And then this idea of a broken and contrite heart, that's a collapsing of the heart. Why? Because of sin. And so I have to develop that, because I can't ignore sin. It is to be confessed. It has to be acknowledged. God requires that of me. Not to hide it and push it away, but to acknowledge it. And if I'm going to be humble, I'm going to have to learn to develop it when I sin. And that is to recognize accountability, that we are held accountable before God. And we cannot ignore sin. It must be dealt with. And then I think of the idea of having to squelch our overconfidence. And Peter comes to mind as a great example of this. He definitely thought very highly of himself. He was confident. He was eager in his desire to please Jesus. But in our desire sometime, in developing humility, we have to be reminded not to be overconfident, but to take heed where we stand lest we fall. So developing humility means that I'm going to have to be mindful of my overconfidence. He definitely, again, had a great fall. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 31 to 35, he declared, and we looked at this not long ago, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but he said, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Matthew 26, verse 33. Verse 35, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And then, after the rooster crowed and he had denied Jesus three times, just a few hours later, he goes out. Jesus turned and looked at him. And he went out and he wept bitterly. Do you not think that he was embarrassed, felt horrible, that he had had so much confidence? And yet, when it really came down to it, he was willing to deny Jesus not once, not twice, but three times, and even get more violent in his denial, that he would actually begin to cuss to try to separate himself from Jesus. And so if you think less of yourself, you're going to be very careful. You're not going to use these words, never. I'll never do that. And will not. Because when you're overconfident, Satan uses that in a very, very crafty way. And then I also think of this particular passage in Romans chapter 12 and verse 16. And once you turn there and we look at it, you'll see the point that I want to make, and that is keep humble company. And so this, you know, who we spend our time with, it cannot be overemphasized, because who we're around influences us and we them. And we understand that the power of influence is great. And so if I'm around a bunch of haughty people that are overconfident, then that rubs off. Romans chapter 12 and verse 16 says, "Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion." Now, all of that verse also reeks to me of the idea of humility. The first point is, if you don't set your mind on high things. And so it's like, okay, what are high things? What would be high things? Well, power, position, wealth, honors, accolades, you know, that's these high things. This is where my aim is. Now, you may get those because you're great at what you do, you're a godly person, and you're humble, and all of those things happen. But do you notice that all of the awards ceremonies that are done for celebrities are done by the celebrities? I mean, they just love to honor themselves. They love to sit around and banquet themselves and praise themselves and applaud for themselves. And then the sad thing is millions of Americans tune in and watch all of that, which just feeds it and says, give us more. And it's just silly. It's nobody's praising them. They're praising themselves, and we all sit and watch and eat it up. At least some of us do. And that's just pathetic if you think about it. Their mind is on high things. But what does Paul tell us to do as Christians? Well, be of the same mind toward one another, which is a teaching that is saturated in the Scriptures. And don't set your mind on high things. And the passage I immediately thought of is, where are we supposed to set our mind? On things above. Colossians 3 and verse 1. We're talking about two different things. He's not saying set your things on high things and my affections are towards heaven. That's not what he has in mind. Colossians 3 and 1 has that in mind. Here he's contrasting high things, again, as power, position, those types of things. But notice what he says. Associate. But rather associate with the humble. The Greek word here that's translated associate means to be carried along with. And I want you to think about that, because I found that very interesting as I was looking at that, because I'm like, carried along with. But isn't that what influence is? I got caught up in the situation, and the next thing you know, I was in the middle of a mob and I got arrested. You see, we get caught up and carried along. And so this idea of association is to be carried along. And so what is he saying? You be carried along with who? The humble. You be carried along with the humble. What does that mean? Be guided and learn from others who are of the same lowly in heart. And that was every bit of Jesus. And even as his disciples were constantly debating and arguing who's going to be the greatest, he finally takes a towel after supper and got down and washed their feet to teach them a lesson. Think about that. I am the Christ, I am the Son of God, and I'm washing your feet. And that's what I'm looking for in my kingdom. And you won't do that if you do not depress yourself down. And so you need to be around people that have that same mindset. And so in developing humility, we need to, and I kind of sum these up a little bit different than some of those points, but rid myself of stubbornness. I've got to always keep God's commands. I need to humble myself when I sin. And watch your confidence level and hang around the humble as a way to help develop humility. So we have come to where we started, and that means we have to work at being humble. Colossians 3 and verse 12 says, put on, in that passage of Colossians 3, he's got put offs and put ons. And one of the things he says you got to put on, he said, put on humility. You have to adorn it. It needs to be a part of your character. Disciples of Christ, we don't have anything to boast about save in Jesus Christ. And humility is cultivated and developed, and it is to be developed within our very essence and our character. And humility is to describe a Christian who knows his or her place before God. He is high and I am low. Now, obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ is a humble act of obedience. You have to believe in one that is greater than yourself. You have to confess your belief in the one who is greater than yourself. You have to repent of yourselves, of your sins, your transgressions of God's law, and realize you can't save yourself from the sentence of death for your disobedience. You cannot save yourself. That is humbling. And you have to submit yourself to water baptism, the humble act of obedience in likeness of Jesus' own death, burial, and resurrection. Going down into the water. Well, if you're not a Christian, why not humble yourself tonight and obey the gospel of Jesus Christ? If you're a Christian and you know the consequences of hiding or ignoring your sin, humble yourself before God and ask Him to forgive you. The angels in heaven are going to rejoice over the sinner that has repented of their sins and come back to God. If we can help anyone in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.